103.2 Dublin City FM, Upbeat. Today I'm talking with Leslie Shoemaker, and Leslie is counselling psychologist with OCD Ireland and also...
The volunteer clinical advisor.
I knew I'd get that wrong. You're very welcome.
I have too many titles.
Let's see if we can understand a few of them. Tell us the history of OCD Ireland, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Ireland.
OCD Ireland was started in 2002 by a group of people who were impacted by OCD. Some had OCD themselves, some were family members. And it was in response to the very limited services available in Ireland. As time went on, it ended up becoming myself and Brian Davis who decided to keep OCD Ireland going, which is what we've been doing since that period of time.
What services do you provide here in Ireland?
We provide support groups, mainly in St. Patrick's University Hospital, very kindly donate the space, but we also have a monthly support group for people with OCD in Trinity College. The support groups that we have in St. Pat's consist of a monthly support group for body dysmorphic disorder, which is known as BDD. We have a monthly support group for trichotillomania. That's where people pull their hair out. It doesn't fall out naturally. They're taking it out themselves. And we have a support group for family members and friends who are impacted by any of these three disorders. And then we have three support groups a month here in St. Pat's for OCD.
And these support groups, there are times and days you could get them on your website.
Yeah, ocdireland.org is our website. We have a calendar up which lists all that. In addition to that, we have 8 free informational talks a year, and that information is posted on our website. Although I've just realized we need to post the February through May talks now.
It's generally second Wednesday of the month, isn't it?
We're the third Wednesday.
Thursday Wednesday.
Aware of the second Wednesday.
Oh, thank you. Tell us, what is obsessive compulsive disorder?
OCD, it's a really misunderstood disorder, and I blame the media for that, unfortunately. I'll try not to sound too technical here. The obsessions, they stand for thoughts, impulses. An impulse might be like a fear of screaming in a crowd, or images, pictures that we see in our head. We all get these things, but with people with OCD, they're intrusive. They come a lot, and people don't want them. What they do to make them go away is the compulsion bit, the C bit. And that is an activity. It could be a mental activity like praying or counting or thinking the same thought over and over again, or an outward activity like hand washing or checking things. David Beckham has OCD and his is symmetry. So he lines everything up so that it's in perfect alignment together.
And OCD is in the range of anxiety in mental health?
Actually, no. What's wonderful is in the new DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, that was just released a couple months ago, OCD got its very own chapter, which is great news, because how we treat OCD, although we use what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, the model is very different than how I would approach a client of mine who had panic attacks or just basic anxiety or phobias. That's a very different treatment model. The thing about the OCD is I don't really care what the content of the thoughts are. For example, I get a lot of young men who come to me who are afraid they're gay. And because it's OCD, I know they're not gay. And the reason why I know this is because the obsession takes the form of the opposite of what we love, of what we value. So I get in people who are afraid they might harm others. I get in people who...
But they don't want to.
They don't want to, and they're never going to. And this is the important thing about the OCD. I have people who come in, Jacob, who's been doing a lot of media for OCD Ireland. He did our OCD week. He has contamination worries. And so at the worst of it, he was bathing in bleach in order to prevent germs from impacting him and the people he loves. And Jacob came up with our slogan for OCD week, and I think it really captures OCD. And it's OCD is the worst superpower. And the idea was, it was really clever. Superheroes do things to save people. Well, people with OCD, they're doing their compulsions, the activities to make that thought or image go away. But they're also doing these things because they feel very, very responsible for the people around them and for the world. And so what they're doing by doing their compulsion is they're trying to save people. Much like a superhero, I was a comic book fan as a kid. Superheroes, they're not born with their power. Something happens and it's given to them. And by God, they don't want it. And I think... people with the OCD are much the same because they really haven't asked for the OCD, but they, like superheroes, need to find a way forward to live their lives in a manageable way. And finally, much like superheroes, They have secret identities. People with OCD often do the rituals, you know, in secretness and solitude because they're afraid, they're ashamed, because they know they're different. They know what they're doing is rather irrational, and that people would view them in a rather peculiar way.
How many people would have OCD in Ireland, or in percentage terms?
In and around 3%. There's a lot of debate around this. I've heard 2% up to 5%. So I think 3% of the population is a good way of looking at it. That would mean 3 people out of every 100 would have OCD. So the reality is, we all know people with OCD. I know people in my own private life who have OCD. You know, not only just the people who I help through OCD Ireland and in my private practice.
Is there something like a spectrum of OCD, like mild to severe?
Yeah, very much so. With the mild cases of OCD, the definition, the clinical definition that I would follow is that the OCD impacts your life for at least an hour a day. So that means between getting the thoughts and doing the activities, whether they be activities you're doing in your head or outward activities. And for those people, and I know somebody like that. He gets on with life pretty well. He's not really going to go for treatment. He manages. He gets on with it. Whereas in Jacob's case, I think it was a really good example, and his bravery to go public, as well as his mother, Mella, who also has OCD. Mella would have moderate OCD, and she took some time out of her, you know, work life and got treatment. Whereas with Jacob, he had to go to St. Pat's Hospital, not in a bad way, but he had to get intensive treatment because he was at the point where he could barely leave his bedroom. He was having difficulties, you know, eating because he was worried about contamination. And as I mentioned, he was bathing in bleach, which was pretty dramatic. Whereas now, a year later after treatment, there he was on the set of, you know, TV talking about his OCD. He's doing his artwork again and still getting treatment, but he's reclaimed his life.
So on that message, recovery is possible.
Oh God, yes. And I think that we forget that because I'm going to come back to something I mentioned about the media before. You know, we look at The Aviator, amazing film, but Howard Hughes, there was no treatment available then. And so he just had to learn to get on with his life. And, you know, there's a TV show called The Monk, which just drives me insane because it's really not OCD. And we make fun of people with OCD. And I'm really unaware of any other disorder where we make fun of people with that particular disorder. We don't do it. It's not, you know, as they say, politically correct. Lucy Liu played somebody with OCD in the TV show Joey. Michael J. Fox, which disappoints me in light of his own Parkinson's disease, he played somebody with OCD on Scrubs. And we need more accurate, realistic portrayal. There's a show, an American TV show called Girls, and they're doing an amazing portrayal of OCD. It's really accurate. It's showing the struggles, the consequences, and I'm really delighted to see that. And of course, then we had The Big Bang Theory with Sheldon. And although it's a comedy, I think it's done quite sympathetically. And they're very honest in telling him he has OCD as well. And I think he's a wonderful character because he's just such a lovely, gentle soul, and he's a good egg. And that one doesn't bother me. But some of the other portrayals, it's just truly been a piss take. And I really have a difficulty with that.
People listening in who are hearing some of the types of OCD and the symptoms, what would be the tipping point where they should be thinking to get help?
Basically where the thoughts or perhaps the behavior, if not both, are happening at least an hour a day and they're causing you to go, hold on here, this isn't normal behavior. I mean, okay, here's the reality. We all do weird and wonky things. That's what keeps us interesting. I have met people who've talked about being in the bathroom, sitting on the loo and counting tiles. I'm thinking, okay, that's not me. But fair enough, it makes you happy. That's grand. We all have rituals. We all have habits. There's nothing wrong with it. It gives us a sense of security. But for people with OCD, it doesn't give them a sense of security. By doing the action, by cleaning, by counting, by praying, whatever it is, by hiding all the knives in your home because you're afraid you're going to harm someone, it actually doesn't bring about relief. That discomfort, that anxiety comes back again and again and again.
For parents who might be recognizing this within the family, what advice would you have for them to progress it to getting in contact?
I would start with your GP. There are services available for kids. I'm not going to lie, they are limited, unfortunately. The services across Ireland are actually quite limited. St. Patrick's University Hospital offers some great things. CAMHS offers some wonderful things at the Mater Hospital as well. The difficulty is that, in my experience, the training around OCD in psychology is quite limited. It might be a 3-hour workshop. It might be mentioned in a textbook. So for people who are working in this area, it's quite specialist. The other difficulty is, and forgive me, this is a bit of a hobby horse of mine, my field isn't legislated. What this means is you yourself could call yourself a psychologist. Anybody can call themselves a therapist, a counselor, or a psychologist. And because of the fact that we've no watchdog, we've no big brother, you know, saying, hey, here are the standards, here are the rules, here's what must be followed. There are a lot of people who are saying that they work with CBT, but they really don't. So I recently, started working with a gorgeous young man, and he was explaining to me that they found a therapist outside of Dublin who said she worked with OCD. And his mom came along to this first session to meet her and said, will you be doing exposure response prevention? We call that ERP. It's a primary treatment method as part of the cognitive behavioral family for OCD. Too many initials, I've just realized. Anyways, and the therapist started talking about hypnosis, relaxation, breathing techniques. These are not appropriate. So there are skilled people out there. You might have to look a little bit to find us on the OCD Ireland website. We do have links to therapists. There's the British Association of Cognitive Behavioral Psychotherapy, the BABCP. These are qualified people who are very skilled to work with OCD. Check with your GP. They may have somebody a CBT therapist that they refer to. There is help available, but again, consumer beware. You really need to be careful.
Service is patchy. It's not regulated. Is anyone lobbying for, to get a broader, service by right and regulation into this sector?
The BABCP is very much so. We have an Irish branch of that. Also, the Psychological Society of Ireland is very much involved in the regulation sector. But they're more broad. They're for all areas of psychology, whereas the BABCP would be really focusing in on the cognitive behavioral therapy aspect. And just because somebody's a psychologist doesn't mean that they have a broad enough knowledge. I got a phone call from a psychologist I know who said, I have a client who's afraid he's gay. I said, well, how are you working with this? He said, well, he may be gay. I'm trying to help him see that. And I went, no. This is OCD. He's not gay. He's straight as an arrow. That's not the issue. And this is a psychologist I really respect, but the difficulty is he doesn't have the knowledge. So here are key things to ask if you're going to speak to somebody. Are they a cognitive behavioral therapist? Okay, more than likely they'll say yes. Do they use exposure response prevention, otherwise known as ERP? The other questions I now say to ask, Paul Sakofkis and his team have brought forward two wonderful further techniques in working with OCD. One is called Theory A and Theory B, and the other one's called the Vicious Flower. If you have somebody who says yes to all three of those techniques, you've got a winner. Book them now. And that's the difficulty, is that sometimes we have wait lists. But usually within the CBT community, I know they know me, I know them. And if I'm booked up, I then obviously, give the prospective client the number of somebody else so they can get treatment as quickly as possible.
You said exposure response. That's meeting your fear.
Yeah, that's where I feel a bit like, oh God, I feel like a torture chamber mistress. The reason I'm saying that...
But in little steps to begin.
Very small steps. Very small steps. It's always in my client's control. But what I ask my clients to do is we come up with a list of feared situations. For example, the knife one. A client of mine who I worked with, a fabulous man, what we decided to do for one of the final sessions was I have this massive knife set. Now, I've purposely bought it for therapy purposes. And he knew when he came in, there would be knives all over the place. And I laughed. I had one in my hand and I joked and said, pick one up, let's play. By the end of the session, he had a knife up to my neck, which probably sounds really dramatic to somebody out there who doesn't understand the treatment of OCD. And the reason why I had this gentleman do this was so that he could see he's in control. He's never going to act on this fear that he has, because an obsession, excuse my crassness, it's a phrase I use with my own clients, they're brain farts. They're hot air. They mean nothing. But the problem is somebody with OCD thinks that they're a fact, think this means something terrible about them, and they potentially may act on it. It's the interpretation that somebody with OCD places on a thought. And they did marvelous research in America in the 1970s, and they discovered, guess what? We all have the same thoughts. But for people without OCD, we're just kind of like, oh, that was a weird moment. And the thought drifts away like a leaf floating down the stream. But for people with OCD, it becomes trapped. It basically gets stuck in a hamster wheel and goes round and around and around. And they think this thought is a fact. And they think this means something about them. And therefore, they must do these actions, these compulsions to bring down the anxiety and make the thought go away. And therefore, that's where we get the hamster wheel. It just goes round and around and around until you get the cognitive behavioral therapy or medication, if not a combination of the two, to break the cycle.
I'm going to throw this question at you.
Go.
I'm not prepared for it, but is there any films or books that you would recommend people pick up on this subject?
Okay, my two favorite books. David Veal and Rob Wilson wrote a fabulous book called Overcoming Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. It's my number two book. Unfortunately, Paul Sakoffkis has now usurped them. His book with his team is called Break Free from OCD, and it's just wonderful. The other thing, though, and I don't want to ignore mindfulness. I know this is the new buzzword out there, but mindfulness is just a wonderful part of the toolkit to help people learn how to manage their thoughts. And the big concept I use with mindfulness is a thought is just a thought. That's it. It means nothing. We all have weird and random thoughts. That's what keeps us interesting. I was recently giving a workshop, and to prove the point, I asked the group of people I was with, highly, you know, skilled professionals and actually in the medical field. And I said, how many people here have ever been on a plane? You looked at the door, gone, oh my God, I could open that door and we'd all be sucked out. And they all kind of looked at me and I started laughing. I said, you've all had the thought. And they all laughed and they admitted having it. But because it's socially inappropriate, we don't discuss these things. There's a wonderful exercise that's actually in David Veal's book. And I've been at workshops for OCD therapists, and they always have us do this. And it's really interesting because you can see who the new kids on the block are. And the exercise is you have to write this out, and you can't cheat. You have to write it out. And what you write is, I'm just going to use my little sister. May my little sister, Megan Petrovich, die in a fiery car accident at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Again, for a listener, you know, who's unfamiliar with OCD or mindfulness, that hearing me say that is probably really distressing. That's probably causing them anxiety because it's like, oh my God, what if that happens? It might be your fault. We call that magical thinking. God forbid something happens to my sister, but if it does, it's out of my control. It's not my fault.
But do most of us kind of throw that away as soon as it comes into our head?
Well, that particular thought, no. That's why we do that particular exercise, because what happens is people stop writing. People might write in a way that nobody else can read it. People might write out the whole sentence but not fill in the person's name. And the reason we ask people to do this exercise is so that they see that the behaviors, the actions that they're doing, the avoidance, avoiding doing that exercise, is exactly what somebody with OCD is doing. Also, that brief moment of anxiety that they're experiencing during this exercise, it's quite distressing. It gives you some insight into what it's like for somebody with OCD. The bottom line is, by not participating with the exercise, you're trying to protect your loved one. I recognize as a CBT therapist, it's just a thought. I have no control. My thoughts do not create a reality like that. But people with OCD think that their thoughts do create these realities. And that's why I think it's a wonderful exercise just to give the average person a very powerful insight into what it's like to have OCD. But remember, that brief moment of anxiety that you've had, for a lot of people with OCD, that's what they're living with day in and day out.
Finally, a question on OCD and stigma.
Oh, it drives me nuts. And again, I blame the media because we've been making fun of it.
Are we making any progress in this regard?
Reduction? Slowly. Slowly but surely. Again, having Jacob and his mom, Mella, go public this year was really remarkable, because we've been looking for somebody to go public for a few years now. We had another young woman named Sarah who went public as well, and their stories were just so powerful, and they were ones of hope. And OCD is manageable. These are average, normal people who are out there living their lives. If you looked at them, you never know they had it. You know, you are not your OCD, is what I always say to my clients. It's a part of you. Like me, I'm American. It's a part of me, but it doesn't define who I am. I have my own independent belief systems. So it's about learning to coexist with it. But the problem is, when people come to me, the analogy I use is OCD is in the front seat. It's in the driver's seat. And essentially, you're in the back seat at the moment. You're just being brought along. And my goal is to teach you the techniques to put your OCD in the boot of the car. We can't get rid of it. It's always going to be a part of you. But the reason why I say I want it in the boot of the car, it's going to kick, it's going to scream, it's going to let you know it's there. But more importantly, it's locked away. You're in control. You're the one driving the car. You're the one determining the direction of your life.
It's contained.
Yeah, very much so.
Leslie, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Just give us some contact websites that you can read out.
The first one would obviously be OCD Ireland. It'd be www.ocdireland.org. The other wonderful website is OCD UK. They have a discussion board, which is moderated. I think it's important to have moderation, just because if there's any inappropriate comments, they are removed. And I think in light of everything that's been happening recently in Ireland, we're more aware of that. OCD UK is an organization we do a lot of work with. And obviously the American organization, the International OCD Foundation, they're number one in the world. We're affiliated with them. So those are the three organizations I recommend.
Leslie Shoemaker, thank you very much.
Thank you.